Welcome to Game Study Hall. Hide your DS in a book and act like you're working.
It's Game Study Hall.
I super didn't want to like bring up the Breath of the Wild thing again. I just felt like it was important to make this point.
This is good enough. It should be in the podcast. It is a game design problem. There is no incentive to attack camps early.
Hold on. Because we're hitting the record in the middle, I'm going to just revisit what I...
Well, I can sum it up. Basically, you have weapons in your inventory of Strength X.
Well,
you can look at a camp and know
We're talking about Breath of the Wild.
Yes, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Those weapons, you know, you're going to get at best the same weapons you have from a camp. At worst, you know, something even worse than what you have. Yeah, you might get more of them, but it's like, if the weapons they gave you were worse, there's no incentive to attack the camp. If the weapons they give you are the exact same, there's no incentive to attack a camp. If the weapons they give you were better, there is incentive to attack a camp, but that would quickly become like an exponential problem of every time you attack a camp, it gets better and better and better. So they couldn't do that. So because they couldn't do the only one that actually gives a reward, the only other options are ones that don't give rewards. So there's no reason to attack camps. It's a game design problem. There needs to be some reward. And crafting materials are not a reward because, you know, there's only so much to craft. You can max out all the armor sets, and it's like, okay.
Right, but the point that I was bringing up originally, because I was looking at this thing, your write-up, and you were saying that if enemy health was lower and durability was higher, this would be better. My point was that in general, if you're making a numbers distinction like that, it's probably indicative of a different problem. And what I think the problem is that you're trying to relate is that doing this thing provides you no reward, but more importantly, is not a fun activity in the first place. Where so no matter what the numbers were going to be, the design problem is in it's not fun, not
I mean,
the
with the right
system.
Reward, things can be fun, right?
Well, no, but you were just saying that there is no reward that would be possible to make that fun for you.
Yeah, they would need to fundamentally change the game.
Right, so I'm saying, like,
actually,
the design problem is
not the
numbers.
I think they would need to fundamentally change the game. If they made it so every enemy camp also dropped, like, a 300 rupee, or, like, a 500 rupee, I think I'd still do it, because, you know, you need, like, 10,000 gold to unlock the fourth Great Fairy. The easiest way to get 10,000 gold is to just go grind the, like, climbing minigame, because every 2 minutes you can get, like, well, every, like, 2.5 minutes, you can get 500 rupees. Like, that's the most optimal grindy way, but it's really boring. If they made it so camps also gave, like, 500 rupees, just as you passively played, you would always hit up any camp you passed, so you would slowly accrue the 10,000 you need anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, I don't... Having not beat it, I don't know what other, like, would
be... And I think that's just... Breath of the Wild is definitely a game, like, you know... It is a rare game where the first hour actually plays really well, and then the rest of the game does a sharp decline. Like, usually, in the first hour, you know what the rest of the game's going to be. In Breath of the Wild, you literally know what it's going to be. And it's no longer fun the second time you do it.
I can definitely see that. That whole point aside, I had only wanted to bring up just that point about the numbers, and then...
Yeah, not talk about Breath of the Wild, because tonight on the Dan and Guy Power Hour, we discuss Guy's Game of the Year picks.
Oh, wait, really? I haven't actually read this list. All right, I'm going to make you recount this to me then.
No, because some of the games on here I do want to talk about in individual episodes, but if we do that, Game of the Year won't come out until, like, you know, March. I want to talk about my Game of the Year at the end of the year.
Well, it's not the end of the year yet.
I always do Game of the Year the start of December.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's like how new cars come out in July. I'm the first person to talk about my Game of the Year.
But all the Game of the Year lists already came out, but it's not the new year, so the least you could do is at least be accurate.
So you're saying everyone else is also doing the car thing of doing Game of the Year early?
Yeah, so you might as well be... If you're going to accept the delineation
November.
Of... whatever calendar we use for the year, we might as well just be accurate with it.
So you're saying I need to start saying my Game of the Year in, like, November.
Or February.
Or February, yeah.
I mean, pretty much, you ever do it any time except the week surrounding the new year, then attempting to get around the other...
Yeah, we all know about the Nobel Prizes for attempted chemistry.
That's a callback to a joke that's not on the episode. You know, no, I'm going to even edit that. I'm going to edit out that explanation. Just
they can just think I'm talking about nothing. All right, so Dan, what were your games of the year this year? Because I already have my write-up ready to go.
So, you know, I actually kind of wish... So we'd actually talked about this a few months back, and I kind of wish I'd remembered to do it. So, in reality, what I should do... So you know how I keep a diary of all the movies I watch?
Yeah.
I want to do one for games. The problem is games are... There are less... the start-stop point is, you know, much fuzzier than a movie, right? Movie ends, it's done. The credits roll, you do your write-up.
Yeah.
But you don't know if you're... Short of being a game, you don't know if you're going to
blind and you can't really review movies, then you can just kind of review them.
You can still hear the movie end.
I wasn't telling you about that. It was remember I showed you that video about the guy that couldn't play Cuphead, the tutorial?
Yeah, he was like a Japanese reviewer who's like notorious for not following the rules or something.
And for just being bad at games. I likened it to, you know, much the same way an illiterate person wouldn't be a good, you know, book reviewer, and a blind man who's also deaf wouldn't be a good movie reviewer. This man was not a good video game reviewer.
Oh, blind and deaf.
Yes. Like, if you do not have the physical senses to consume media, you probably aren't a good reviewer of it.
Well, you'd be a good reviewer for people who would have the same experience.
The blind deaf review of...
I mean, well, no, but you gotta think there... I mean, there's more than one blind and deaf person on the planet. Well, but even taking a step away from blind and deaf, just... I'm sure there are blind movie reviewers who... review movies from the point of view of a blind person.
Yes, I think, yes. But the problem with the movie is, a movie is basically, like, two-ish piece, like, senses. It's the sight, the sounds. There might be some, like, you know, you're feeling the rumble from how loud sounds, but, like, you have to either be able to hear or see to enjoy a movie. One of the
right,
two.
Right, if you were blind and deaf, yes. Life is very difficult. I don't even remember what your point was. Something about the Cuphead guy?
I'm just saying, you were talking about reviewers, and I'm like, yeah, you have to have the basic senses to consume a review.
And my point being, right, my point was that when you're done with a game is a lot fuzzier than when you're done with a movie. So yes. I found it not as easy to keep like a diary of the games I play, and I kind of wish I just put in the extra effort to do it anyway.
So I have a spreadsheet, but it's just more for tracking which games I need to beat. But how I determine beating a game depends on the game.
Oh, you know what? Actually, this ties into pretty well to... So, I told you I started doing more Python stuff. So I'm taking some course that's like, automate the simple stuff. I think I'm going to make a Python thing to just log every time I, you know, run an exe. And then I'll just have a list of every time I boot up a game.
So, more or less a keylogger, except...
But specifically for, like, my Steam library or whatever.
Doesn't Steam do that for you?
I don't think it goes that far back. Like, I'm actually booting Steam up now to see if I can
I'm quite certain Steam tracks your playtime.
Right, so it checks the quantity of... for each game, but I'd be more interested in, like, my last 120 days.
I mean, you should use a Nintendo 3DS or a Wii U or a Switch because it tracks you on each day how much time you spent to the minute on every single game.
Yeah.
Now, there was a bug in the 3DS software initially. So, like, my first, like, 6 months or so of 3DS playtime don't exist anymore, which is kind of a shame. But, like, other than that, you know, I can look on and say, okay, on, you know, this day in 2015, I played exactly, you know, 91 minutes of this game, and then 4 minutes of this game, and...
Yeah, like, so I'm looking at my thing...
Like, that's what you want, right?
Not even the quantity, just... You know, even if I put 1 minute into it, Because then at least I would know what titles to look at, because then I could just look at my playtime. Which I can sort by playtime. I guess I could just sort by. So, in the last couple of weeks, I've played Counter-Strike, which I play a lot of that. Which was a whole other thing that I was talking to you about the other day. But Homefront, which I got for free, and it's not very good. X3 Terran Conflict, there was a free weekend. And I'm a big fan of the there's the Battlestar Galactica mod people made for it. That's really great. But I found out that if you die once, you reset. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to not. So I spent a couple hours. So it's this really cool space sim where it actually takes a really long time to fly anywhere. And it was amazing.
As space is, yes.
Yeah, well, like, but it would take 10 minutes just to fly from, like, one hypergate to the next. It was, I don't know why, I found it amazing. Like, I played for about an hour, just,
now
like,
imagine if
mostly
it was, like, real space,
where
it would take, like, 10 years at the speed of light to do that.
Yeah. Well, but, and then at some point I, like, crashed into something and exploded, and then it started from the beginning. I was like, oh. Something about repeating the floating through space part just didn't seem.
Was it something
it
like
wasn't
you had
even
to set your bind point?
No, I think it's just like a. I mean, I should have dug into it more. I was just disappointed. I mostly didn't want to go through the tutorial again. It wasn't even the amount of time. But no. I think it's just that, like, it is a game, like, kind of like an arcadey thing where, like, there is a game to play and you try to beat it and see how far you can get or whatever. I think there's also, like, a sandbox mode, but, I mean, it was a free weekend, so I didn't have. And then Sanctum 2, which is also terrible. And then, but Doom, the ultimate Doom, which I tried to get you to get. But yeah, that is what I've played recently, so it's kind of, although I could, you know what, actually, let's talk about your game of the year, and I'll dig through this thing. All right,
so my short list for game of the year is Guy Quest, Sonic Mania, Super Mario Odyssey, Shovel Knight, Spectre of Torment, and Fire Emblem Echoes, Shadows of Valentia.
So, Spectre of Torment, that's the Spectre Knight?
Yeah.
So we talked about this already.
Yeah, we did talk about Shovel Knight. I think we've talked about three of these five games already. You know what? I really like Shovel Knight. It tickles me in a way that I like to be tickled.
I mean, you sold it. You sold, like, I'd heard it was good. It looked interesting, but listening to you talk about it is the thing that really sold me at Shovel Knight. It's on a very short list of things that I need to get around to. But I can't believe I haven't bought it yet.
Actually a little disappointed in myself in that I didn't 100% it yet, just because I was busy with, like, you know, finishing Guy Quest this year. So, yeah, like,
I'm actually curious.
Haven't come out with King Knight yet, which is going to be the last, like, expansion DLC. So once that happens, I'm also going to 100% everything. Like, all the challenge modes I haven't done. Because I had 100%ed it before Spectre Knight came out. I did all Plague Knight stuff. And all Shovel Knight stuff. All the achievements,
too. Yeah, I'm curious what, what the achievements are.
I mean, it's, like, some of them are pretty simple achievements, like, you know, complete the game in one playthrough without dying, do this in under a certain time, you know, really boring stuff. And then, you know, there's harder ones, like, you know, do one level without using your shovel. So, you know, it's like, oh, I guess I need to use my items for this, or, like, you know, do one level using only your shovel. And it's like, oh, that means I need to, you know, actually be good at, you know, using my, like, shovel bounces. I can't use my, you know, propeller blade to jump across this gap, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm looking at your Steam library, and it is very confusing.
It's very what?
Very confusing.
What's confusing about it?
Like, just, you've Sonic Generations, Civ 5, Portal 2, Hyper Light Drifter, Bastion, Tropico 4, Team Fortress 2, Portal, BVVVVVV, Cuphead, Dota, Besieged, Alien Swarm, Sega Mega Drive Classics, Dark Souls, Left 4 Dead 2,
Generations,
Super Meat Boy, Binding of Isaac, and Shower with Your Dad Simulator 2015. I don't know, it's just like
that
a
last
weird,
one was a gift.
No, that game's awesome, but
I haven't played it yet either.
You gotta shower with your dad. But not, you gotta make sure you don't shower with not your dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, so one game, though, it's like this really weird combination.
Like a third of those games are gifts, which is kind of the issue.
Like, yeah, some of them are gifts from me.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, because, actually, probably more than a third of it. Let me see exactly what percentage of my games are gifts.
I know Left 4 Dead was a gift from me. I think you told me Dark Souls was a gift.
Yeah, Dark Souls was actually the gift where I changed my backlog. My backlog rules used to be any game I own, I need to beat. That was when I changed it to any game that I own and have intention to beat, I need to beat.
You've now removed bad games from your backlog?
No.
Or
no,
just games you...
It's not retroactive. It's just going forwards. It was just there to stop backlog trolls from getting me one of those, you know, 600,000 in one games where it's just, you know, changing the background color of Tetris or something.
Did that happen?
It almost happened.
I mean, Dark Souls alone is a... I mean, if you were doing it as fast as possible, so a few dozen hours.
Oh my god, what's my Steam password? We'll do the video survey later. I'm already in. Oh my god, every time I log in, it asks me to confirm my... Alright, so let's see here. Bought it. Did you buy me Portal, or did you make me buy Portal?
I think it was... I probably made you get it when it was free. There was like a few months.
No, I think I bought like the physical box. I think we went out and got it back in the days.
I mean, I made you bring me to go get the orange box. I don't think you bought your own version.
No, you bought me Portal after the fact. Or no, you made me buy Portal physical box after the fact.
You sure?
Yes. Just a sec. I'm just gonna count. I'm gonna count. How many games do I have total?
I mean, couldn't you just look at? Like, log into your credit card and see?
I don't have that card anymore.
No.
That was my original debit card, like the one I had growing up. Once Becky and I got married, we got a new bank account. Both our names are on it, but that also got rid of my history. So yeah, I can't see if I went to GameStop in, like, you know... January 1st, 1970, because I guess Steam didn't keep track of last played back then.
No, yeah, they didn't start doing the the clock and all that stuff until...
Yeah, alright, so I'm just going to count the games I bought. One, two...
Because it doesn't have my Counter-Strike Source playtime. Three. I only have 38 hours logged, and that is not right.
Six. So seven of these games I bought myself.
And were more than half the other ones bought by
me. How many games are there total? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There are 18 games. Seven of them I bought. In terms of direct gifts, actually, 1, 2, 7. Yeah, I bought 7. So let's see here. That was a gift from Gudson. Hyperlight Drifter, gift from Gudson. Binding of Isaac, gift from Kevin. Dark Souls, gift from Gordon. Bastion, gift from Billy. Super Meat Boy, gift from Kevin. Left 4 Dead 2. That was a gift from you, right?
Yeah. I did that, get 6 keys thing.
Team Fortress 2, that was a gift from Kevin. Shower with Your Dad Simulator, gift from Gordon. Oh, Sega Mega Drive Classics was, the pre-order bonus for Sonic Generations. So I didn't really buy it directly. But, I guess my actions caused it to enter my library. So I guess we can say, 7.5. Left 4 Dead 2 beta? Was that part of Left 4 Dead 2?
Yeah, I think it's something Steam adds to your...
Yeah. So, you got me that one. And Besiege. I got that one myself. Because...
I hear it's really good. I haven't played it.
You know, I saw a bunch of, goofy Webm threads on 4chan, and I'm like, I gotta see this game. And it's this game costs a couple dollars. Even if they never finish it, it's good enough as is. I'll just pay for it now.
Just a silly physics simulator?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I actually haven't played it. Is it as fun as it looks?
It's
on all,
a lot
gifts?
Harder to make those, super killing machines than it looks.
I mean, that's a good sign, right?
I mean, yeah, your first machine is going to be, a small cart with one wheel, and it'll just kind of fall over, and you'll be like, why don't you do amazing things?
I mean, it's like playing Kerbal, where you're like, I got this.
Yeah, there's most Steam library. So yeah, back to Game of the Year. So we discussed Shovel Knight, we discussed Sonic Mania, Guy Quest. It's the greatest game ever made.
I wanna bring up some contention with putting anything you worked on Game of the Year.
Well, that's why there's a nice little thing at the bottom. Yeah, there's a nice little asterisk that says, I can't pick my own game as favorite. If I'm not allowed to pick my own game as a favorite, then I'll go with my second choice.
Which is... Do
you want to see my game of the year? Sonic Mania. Like, other than Guy Quest, obviously. Guy Quest 1, Sonic Mania 2, but if I can't pick Guy Quest, I'm going with Sonic Mania. It just feels good, man.
Feels good to finish things, or it feels good to run fast?
It feels... The entire game just feels good. It feels good to go fast. It feels good to play Blue Spheres. Yes, Sonic Mania. Guy's Game of the Year. Dan, what's your Game of the Year?
Just talked about this.
Oh, you don't even have one?
No. This is what I'm saying. Like, I don't... Well,
you literally don't have a single game that you can say...
Well, I was going to answer my year. Question.
Like,
question.
Fire Emblem Fates was my Game of the Year.
Does Game of the Year have to have come out in this year, or is it the Game of the Year in that this was the game for your year?
Yeah, by complete random chance, all of the games I really liked this year also came out this year. That is a rarity
Most of the time, I'm looking at your list this year, and these are all this year.
What was the game I played this year that I liked the most?
Well, because under the not limited by year of release, my Game of the Year is probably Dark Souls 2.
Was this the year when you played it the first time?
Yeah, this is so I...
Then yeah, that's completely fine. Yeah, my other rule is you can't have the same Game of the Year, like, twice.
What if it's the only thing you played for those 2 years?
Then you don't get a Game of the Year
that
year. That
doesn't make any sense.
I had a year when that was like that.
Was it WoW 2 years in a row?
I mean, when someone forced me to say, pick any game you played this year, I'm like, well, I guess I just have to pick WoW, because it's like the only game that I even sort of liked this year.
2 years ago, I got into Dark Souls for, like, the first time for realsies. And then Dark Souls 2 was in the Humble Bundle, like, the monthly bundle. I was like, well, I guess I'll give this a spin, like, even though I'm not done with the first one yet. I mean, I only have, like, 50 hours in it, which is not even half of what I have in the first Dark Souls. But I really like it, and I don't... The reviews of it in the early days were not very good, but I don't agree with the reviews, and more retrospective reviews have been more favorable to it. People complain that there's too many dudes in armor.
What does that mean?
That there was less, like, monstrosities. You know, like, there weren't Krakens and Giants and, like, Lovecraftian horrors so much as, like, dudes that kind of looked like you.
So it's kind of like it doesn't have the spectacle and the scope of fighting a giant monster.
Yeah, I think part of it was like a level of expectation to be in a similar, like, that bosses be of a similar format to the first game. And largely they are, except in like art design, thus then influencing their characteristics, like, in a logical manner. But I really enjoyed it. And it was a little more fun to play the second one, because when I got it was off the bundle, which means there was a bunch of people, like, on. The first Dark Souls was... Because there's, like, the online component of Dark Souls is pretty big and super fun. Like, people can invade you, you can call friends to help, and, like, all this other stuff. And it was a lot harder to find people in the first one. But when I got the second one, a whole bunch of other people got it for the same reason. So it was a little easier, and a lot more people, like, at the same level I was. So I think that definitely influenced my...
It wasn't endgame person comes in and just ganks you for fun. It was actually, like...
Or endgame person comes in and just, like, floors the content that you were struggling with. So, like, if you're having trouble with a boss, you can, like, put down a sign and, like, bring in other people to help you fight a boss. And it's really cool to bring in someone else who's also struggling on that boss, because now you're working at it together. But if you get some dude who comes in and is like, oh yeah, I'm level...
Oh, this is easy. 1,000. Here, go stand in the corner.
Yeah, exactly. All you have to do is not die. Although, I've definitely still died in certain things. this, like that. There was one time where I like rolled off a cliff. It's like, oh, all I had to do was not do that. Then here I am. All fucked. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I haven't beaten it yet. I'm ashamed to say, but it's definitely, other than Counter-Strike, definitely the thing I played the most. And the other real thing is, I spend so much time making stuff that I don't play nearly as much as I would like. If I'm not busy making stuff, I'm probably with people playing board games also. Well, I just played Terraforming Mars again.
I actually haven't played Terraforming Mars since PAX, and I really want to. Oh. I forgot to bring it with me when I went down to Long Island for...
Wait, isn't there a digital version?
No.
I thought you were playing with some people by email or something.
No, that's Russian Railroads.
Oh, Russian Railroads. So I played with my old flatmate, and I got... fuck is it? The Planting People.
Oh, yeah, that they're really good.
And my opening hand had no plants in it?
I mean, that's not necessarily, like, deadly and you can't come back from it. It's just, you know... Like, I found, actually, in general, you really only need about, like, 3 plant production until, like, maybe the last, like, turn or two. Because, like, 3 is, like, every 2-ish turns you get enough to, like, drop greenery because, you know, you're going to be dropping them on places that have plant returns on the board, right? Obviously. So, like, every 2-ish turns you get a greenery. It takes basically that long just to get cities anyways because, you know, early game plant production guys, you know, it's kind of hard to get the production up to get your cities. Like, unless you get lucky with a couple of the city cards, but because you're the plant guys, you're not going to have the, you know, steel for it.
Yeah, it's just...
Like, I found that
it's rough not having anything in your opening hand
because
you can't plan.
I mean...
Like, you're just hoping.
Yeah, you're just hoping. I mean, in general, it's a bad place to be, but there's usually at least something that's decent in your opening hand. Like, well, at least it's a steel production. Well, at least it's a titanium production. It's at least it's something, right?
Right, but that gets into a weird territory where do you plan with what's in your hand, or do you plan to use that as a stopgap? Like,
usually when that happens, I either... Like, if I have truly nothing in my hand, I'll just drop a city. Just like...
No, I'm saying, like, you have good stuff in your hand.
Oh, if I have good stuff in my hand, then I'll just pick up the good stuffs and just, you know, a little production. If you're the plant people...
No, but it's not just like... Right, no, it's not just like, oh, here's a production. It's... You have, like, a good machine in your hand that you could build if you went all the way through it.
Then just go for it.
Do you... You just... Well, right, and this is my question, right? Do you just go for it with the guarantee this is going to happen? Or try to build some stopgap stuff because hope you draft something?
I mean, your corporation isn't, like, you don't need to live and die by your corporation. Your corporation is a nice bonus. I've done times where I've been the plant guys. I've added none to my plant production. I've gone completely into steel and titanium and big Jupiter or something like that. Like, ignored plants whatsoever, and I put down 2 greeneries, basically just from my passive plant cubes accruing throughout the entire game.
Right. I mean, this was more of a playstyle question. I ended up building almost no plant production until the very end, just by happenstance, because I got enough stuff that was just...
I'll just play that. Oh, that's good. I'll just play that. Yeah.
Right, and then all of a sudden, I just had all the steel and titanium. I was like, well... Because I could just build this card for free. I got a bunch of the good PvP stuff early on, too, that let me to get... Well, you place it, you get a free resource, which lets you do another thing, get a free resource, do another thing. And then Polar Explorer, the one that, like, built under the equator, was one of the... Was that, and then also the generalist, like, get one production and everything. Yeah, so I nailed all that, and I was like, done. It was a very high-scoring game. I completely dominated the map, though. One of the other things was the tiles built next to oceans. And it was a race, and then I got one that was like, place an ocean anywhere. I was like, well, I win.
Is there a place an ocean anywhere card? I know of 3 cards that place on oceans. I don't think there's a place an ocean.
Oh, maybe it was... place a greenery in an ocean.
Oh yeah, that's it. There's the Protected Valley and the Mangrove, which are place of greenery in an ocean tile. So if someone builds next to, oh man, there's going to be an ocean here, so this is guaranteed to help me, and you just drop your greenery right in the middle of the big area. It's like, nope, I'm blocking 2-year things, and I'm getting an extra tile next to oceans.
Yeah, they had like, I think they had two things like Kitty Corner, and they were going to build a third, and then I dropped the greenery on that ocean tile.
Not anymore.
And then built oceans around it.
Actually, that's not necessarily the best, because you really only need one touching it. I found when Ocean, when Estate Dealer, it's the name of it, when that comes out, you're almost better off kind of like doing your oceans every other tile. If not,
well, no,
just
you want to get, you want to get them out as fast as possible so they can't build around, like.
I mean, I guess it depends on where your stuff is,
too. Oh, we also didn't build an ocean until both temperature and oxygen was full.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's weird. And now I just want to play Terraforming Mars. Ah, I want to play so bad.
I cannot believe how much Terraforming Mars I've played in the last like couple of weeks.
It's such like, a good game.
Packs in it.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how I feel about it, but I'm still very interested in it.
I would describe it as
says more than anything.
It has so much randomness that like it always feels new and fresh every time you play it, but it's so balanced you don't mind. Like it's not like, oh, this is just LOL random. No, nothing happens ever. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think
you don't
my
feel
only
like things
about...
aren't happening for a reason.
Right. Yeah, everything feels good that way. I just my continued one sticking point: the PvP stuff generally feels not good in a like player sense, not in like a game design sense. And like every time it happens to me, it feels like it's out of left field, and it feels catastrophic.
About 5% of the cards are PvP cards.
Right, and if it's a first draft or it's in their opening hand, you don't even know it exists.
Yeah. I mean, you basically just have to... I play the game assuming those PvP cards are in my opponent's hand until I have seen otherwise. I just play really defensively. It's like, well, you know what? I do not give myself a power gain until right before I need it, because I have to assume they've got the, you know, power sapping card ready to go to sap my one power.
Yeah, and power more than anything is also, yes, we're talking about.
Yeah, well, also there's three PvP cards for power, too. It's like, there's one for steel, one for titanium. You know, you can reasonably say, one in 200 chance they've got the one card. I'll go for it. But, you know. Power sapping?
Well,
3 and 200?
1 in 200, and then also... But also the probability that they want to play it over something else.
Yeah, exactly. Also, two of them are, like, minus 1 points at endgame. So, like, you have to really want to screw someone over to use them.
You know, I think I had negative 7 points on cards at the end. I mean, honestly, those negative point cards are so good, I play them almost every time.
I don't like them because I feel like... It's, you know, I look at them the same way I look at Corruption in Lords of Waterdeep, that expansion.
Oh, you take it all. Take it all.
The problem with that is, like, you say, just one little Corruption won't hurt. Just one little Corruption won't hurt. And then there's 2 turns left in the game. You've got 7 Corruption, and Corruption is, like, minus 6, and you're like, oh god, what have I done? What got
right,
me
well,
to this
no,
point?
And this is, you go all in or not at all. You can't. Or you can't dip your toe. Never dip your toe.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I say, nope, we're playing this pure and straight. I'll only take one Corruption if I already have a card in my hand that is remove one Corruption. Or you just get screwed over. It's debt. It's literally just, let's put the money on the credit card.
What's the event card that gives you 2 terraforming rating but it's worth negative 2 points?
Bribed Committee.
There you go.
Technically, that one is just like...
That's just amazing.
That one is just a straight, like, you get
it's
2
neutral
money.
Points, yeah. But you get 2 money, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same. In fact, I think it costs the same. It costs 6, right? The same as corporate buyout or whatever card.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But, in comparison, that is also it's also better for if you have the one, if any of the stuff that, you know, whoever has the most terraforming rating for bonuses... Yeah, I'll play that just about every time. Yeah, I had like negative 7 points in cards. It was a very high scoring game. I won by like less than 10 points. I also like dominated the map. And this thing I was talking about one of the earlier times we played, that in 2 players, I don't think I've played, other than the 4-player tournament game, which I don't count because that was very one-sided. I've only played two-player Terraforming Mars.
It's a different meta than, like, multiplayer Terraforming Mars. Multiplayer Terraforming Mars, like, especially once you get to four or five players, your ground game is, like, maybe five tiles. If you get three cities, four greeneries out, you're guaranteed to win ground game. Whereas in two players, like, three cities, four greeneries is the bare minimum to even maybe touch the other person.
Well, yeah, so, like, I had, like, 15 tiles out or something.
Yeah.
At the end of the game. Because it's just... Because you can put them anywhere.
And
you're like, oh, I really need a resource, so I will build something
also,
just to get that resource.
A denial strat. Every tile you put out is a tile they can't get. You're 100% denying the one person you care about denying.
Right. So, yeah, every single thing you do is... Like, every antagonistic move is a benefit.
Yes.
So it's like, it's such a different game. And I'm thinking that my mind is so deep into the two-player game that, like, I really need to just play a bunch of multiplayer to, like, shake it free.
Once you come to Buffalo, we can force Merrimack to do that.
Yeah, that's not far off.
Yeah.
Not far off at all.
Do we want to talk about the rest of my Game of the Year games?
Yeah, I did not mean to go on a Terraforming Mars.
Oh, man, Terraforming Mars is so good. So, we talked about Sonic Mania, Guy Quest. I absolutely got
it. Well, we were talking about whether or not it was a coincidence that all your games came out in the same year.
It was. Normally, it's not. But, yeah, Guy Quest.
Because you also have Super Mario Odyssey on here, which I have not played yet.
I want to do a full episode on that. I mean, I've already beaten the game, but I haven't 100%ed it.
I just really, I've heard a bunch of stuff from other people, like, my friends played a bunch of it. It's another one of those games where, like, I'm kind of glad I don't own a Switch, because that's how bad I want to play it. And, like, I know how much, right, if I ever buy a Switch, I want to buy Breath of the Wild and buy Super Mario Odyssey, and, like, that's over 100 hours just gone.
I mean, you probably could skip Breath of the Wild, you've already played it enough.
But I like it. That's the point.
At the very least, you should buy Odyssey first.
And well, it depends what happens between now and when I end up, if I ever buy a Switch, and not just accidentally wait too long and end up getting the... Oh, fuck, what's the...
What, the Switch XL or whatever they're going to come out
with?
Yeah,
like, what are we jokingly calling the next thing after the Switch?
the new Switch.
My,
oh, no, they'll definitely Nintendo 128. They always do a revision.
I mean, but that wasn't my point. My point was that, like, I accidentally waited too long, and it's just the entire next generation started. Not that, like, the availability or, you know, anything like that. I'm like, I still just want to say the Nintendo 128. Or the Ultra Nintendo. The Ultra Nintendo is my favorite, actually. Like, it's a stupid thing to call it.
I don't know why they didn't call it the Ultra Nintendo.
Because it sounds awful.
How's that sound? How's that different than the Super Nintendo?
I think Super and Ultra have just a different, like, mouthfeel.
I think it might be a Japanese thing, like, where, you know, Super is always assumed to be second, Ultra is always assumed to be third. Because, like, look in Pokemon, where they have, like, Super Potions and Ultra Potions. Like,
I mean,
I have
could
to
also
assume
just be
Great Ball.
It could also just be a Nintendo thing.
It could be a Nintendo
your thing. Both points of reference are Nintendo. It could just be a mannerism. Although, I think even in English, Ultra is... See, I guess I don't really...
Yeah, it's called. It is called the Super Ball in Japanese. I thought so.
Ultra is... The number one definition of Ultra is an extremist?
What was I going to say?
Sound?
Guy Quest, by the way, is just a masterpiece of game design.
I mean, I don't think you're allowed to say that.
I think I am.
I don't
you're
think
in the
anyone's
factory,
allowed to speak.
And the robots you're fighting, they do drone strike, right? So you need to know, oh, I move out of the drone strike. Then the boss in the end of the robot, he does drone strike. He teaches you what the boss mechanics are in the trash leading up to the boss. While also adding a new mechanic.
Completely standard?
No, there are a bunch of games that you don't bother doing that when they should.
So, but other things being bad doesn't make your thing good.
It makes them good by
something
comparison.
Being bad does not make something else good.
No, it makes me good by comparison.
By comparison, but not not in a vacuum, which is my point. Also, the definition of ultra wouldn't make sense in English, actually, now that I'm looking at it. The number one adverb is very, extremely. So the very Nintendo.
It's very Nintendo.
Which is true, but... although, actually, that'd be a pretty good title for Wii. Cause, actually, Wii U is very Nintendo.
You mean it's a down. Name that's so bad people didn't realize it was a new system until years later, including people that, like, actively follow and play games?
Did you not realize? I didn't know.
I knew it was a new system.
I mean, I'm one of those people I didn't realize.
Yeah, Chris and Al didn't realize it was a new system. They thought it was an add-on for the Wii. Like, when Nintendo first announced it, they later came out with pictures of the main console and said, no, it's a full new console, see?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that naming convention does not make sense compared to, like, all their other consoles had... No, that's a lie. They're all actually... They've all been...
I mean...
Right, like, the Nintendo, the Super Nintendo, the Nintendo 60...
They at least have somewhat different names.
Right, it's Nintendo Wii U. Nintendo Wii, Nintendo Wii U. Right, yeah, that naming convention doesn't...
No, it's not called the Nintendo Wii. It's just called the Wii.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just the Wii.
U. Then that does make sense, though. Right. It's not good, but it does make sense.
Right, but the problem is, when they showed the Wii U and they only showed the controller, remember, the initial announcement, they didn't show the console itself. They just showed people playing with the controller, like they did with the Wii, where they only showed them playing with the remote. But, like, people thought it was just a new remote add-on for the Wii.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I didn't realize.
Like, this was 100% I didn't see the demo or anything. Case in point, all the good games on the Wii U that no one bought are getting ported to the Switch and are selling like wildfire. You know, people are like, oh my god, Mario Kart 8? This game's amazing! Why did Nintendo save all these good games for the Switch? Why didn't it come out earlier? It's like, it did come out earlier.
So wait, the Switch didn't get its own Mario Kart?
I mean, not yet. It's been out for a couple months. The Switch will get its own Mario Kart eventually. It'll get Mario Kart 9. But it got a port of 8, like, the first month.
Oh, that's right. The Switch isn't that old, is it?
No, why does everyone think it's been out for years?
Because I have no concept of time.
You know what I think it is? It's because so many games have come out, like, in such a short period of time, people assume it's, like, 2 years old. Like, yeah, there's already a Mario and a Zelda out for it. You know? It's like, no,
they're... And they announced they're working on a Metroid, right?
Yeah, they announced they're working on a Metroid. They announced they're working on a Pokemon. They announced they're working on a Fire Emblem.
Hey, what was the last console Pokemon?
Never. There has never been a console Pokemon. Like, main series console Pokemon. Obviously, there's been, like, side games, like Colosseum or Stadium.
Colosseum, Snap.
Yeah.
The fighting game.
Yeah, Pokken Tournament. Also was ported to the Switch.
Yo, we got a copy of that in our office. I watched them play for 5 minutes. And it, on paper, sounds like an amazing idea, and I have no concept of if it's good or not.
Like, it's like a real fighting game where you need to learn combos and learn matchups. And if you don't, then you can only progress so far.
So it's like real Pokemon?
No, like, you need to be physically good with your fingers. Whereas Pokemon is entirely strategy. You know, this is, like, you have to get good.
So, I mean, that sounds like a glowing recommendation for someone who enjoys fighting
games. If you enjoy fighting games, like, Zach absolutely loves Pokken Tournament. I really enjoyed it, but my issue was just, I hit my skill cap, and it's like, well, I'm never going to get better than a D rank online. I can beat someone who's never played, but I can't do much better than that, so...
Yeah, my point was, I'm terrible at fighting games. I like them in theory, but...
Yeah, like, it's fun playing against people that aren't very good, like me, but, you know, playing against, like, Zach, it's just, I can't touch him, and it's so trivially easy for him, it's not that much fun for him. There's nothing wrong with that, it's just, you know.
Yeah, and fighting games, too, there's so, such a specific, like, group, of, like, people who do or do not enjoy them, that, like, playing against those people is so... impossible. I've played against Zach and a bunch of stuff, and he's stopped me every time.
Yeah.
I am terrible at fighting games.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's definitely one of the more physically intense genres.
Well, it's not even the physically intense. Like every game, there is, there's just knowledge you need to have. And if you don't enjoy it enough to want to have that knowledge, you're never going to get past a certain... You're never even going to reach the point where your physical skill matters.
No, I think with fighting games especially, like...
If you have no knowledge of the game, your physical skill is irrelevant.
Yeah, but I'm saying with fighting games, even if you have perfect knowledge of the game, if you have bad physical skill,
Right. My point is that I'll never even reach the point where my lack of physical skill matters because I lack the drive to have enough knowledge to even reach that barrier. Right, I'm losing on the knowledge game. It doesn't matter how my physical input is.
Yeah.
Because I've spent too much time memorizing the inventory layouts of Counter-Strike.
That's important. You gotta act fast.
I mean, you can actually just set macros to do it for you. The only reason I know it is just through physical repetition. Which is how you learn most stuff in fighting games, and really any sport. That's the point I'm at in roller derby, where I know what to do, I just don't have the reaction speed because it's not, grounded in my head yet. I also just have very bad habits from playing other sports. I want to move into position versus maintaining a strong position, because I feel like there's strength in movement from playing, running sports, that, standing still is bad. It's not as true in roller derby. It's also just a very difficult game that I'm not very good at yet. Well, I got my first penalty last night. Broke my streak. Broke my streak in the first 10 seconds.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
You didn't win.
And I still won. Anyway. Something game of the year.
Oh, yeah. So GuyQuest is a masterpiece of game design. What
else? Oh, right. That's what I'm saying. You can't just throw around adjectives about things you work on.
No, I can.
I'm just going to not even... Yes, okay. Masterpiece of game design, sure.
Let's hear it. So Super Mario Odyssey, it's just a really good game. I was worried after Breath of the Wild... And I was wrong. It's Mario 64, but so you know Mario 64, how there's 120 coins, or 120 stars, I mean.
Yeah, this one's moons, right?
Yes, but the thing is, I would describe it as, my body has not yet caught up to the dopamine. I don't have dopamine tolerance from getting a star. Mario 64, you get a star, what happens? You get a nice little dopamine rush, right? I got a star. In Mario Odyssey, the stars are everywhere. There's 860 of them, but they still feel like normal Mario 64 stars. So it's a non-stop climax of I got a moon. I got a moon. I got a moon. Oh, and behind this was another hidden moon. So many moons. Oh, it's so good.
I'll save my questions for the specifically Odyssey episode. But yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. I've heard some really silly, awesome things. But I did actually, someone said, I think that I watch random YouTube videos all the time, and someone said that, that Mario Odyssey has the perfect jump.
What do you mean the perfect jump? What does that mean?
That there's a new jump in Odyssey, right?
Oh yeah, so you can throw your cap and then dive at it, and then you could bounce off your cap and then dive again, so you can do a triple jump. Or you can do the wall jump, and then as you kick away from the wall, toss your hat back and jump back towards the wall. You can do all sorts of broken stuff like that.
Well, their point was that they've been adding new jumps that Mario can do throughout the games.
Yeah.
But like, you know, 64, you can do that like extended, like forward jump.
Yeah, you can do the long jump, the triple jump, yeah. Side somersault.
Right. And just the idea that Mario is still really, really good for jumping.
Yeah.
That, like, that's just a solid experience.
Yeah, it's...
You know, even now...
Like, I do have one, I guess, not really complaint, but like... Like, they meant for really simple controls. So, like... What was I going to say? Like, in order to do the leap, you have to press crouch in the air, then immediately press the hat jump button again. Except crouch in the air is ground pound, so until you get the timing down, you're going to make a mistake and then jump into the air and just ground pound to your death. I feel like they should have just had a separate button for dive, but they wanted to do the, you know, simple control scheme, two buttons that they always do. So, you know, that was a design choice. I also would have been okay with, like, pressing the Y button when your hat is out is automatically dive towards it instead of having to do crouch plus dive.
But I mean, this gets into the, like, context-sensitive stuff we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, like...
Not on cast.
Yeah, it's incredibly specific. They overloaded the controls strictly for the sake of, you know... They overloaded the controls simply for the sake of making sure it's, you know, easy.
I mean, well, do you think it's that they wanted it on two buttons?
Yes, because all Mario games are two buttons. You've got your run button and your jump button.
Right. And you don't think it's... I mean, like, it sounds like it's kind of a precise jump to make.
I mean, I'm saying...
There was some decision about that.
They could have just as easily made it be, if your hat is out, pressing the Y button instead of doing nothing makes you do the leap. Like, does that make sense? Like, if you press Y and your hat isn't out, you'll throw the hat. If you press Y and the hat is out, you'll leap in the direction you're facing. You still have to aim towards the hat. Instead, it's you must press shoulder button, then Y, in quick succession to do the leap. It's strictly you must do a two-button combination instead of one.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying, like, do you think...
I don't think they said, oh, we want this to be slightly harder to do. Let's make it a two button instead of a one button. Like, let me put it this way. If this was a game where I could remap controls, I would remap that to be single button instead of, you know, two buttons.
I mean, that's not how remapping works, but all right.
I mean, if it's a game, it lets you map combinations of buttons as well.
Oh, well then.
What's
the last game you played that did that?
Cuphead.
You can remap combinations?
Yeah.
Interesting. I haven't played Cuphead yet.
The last game I played that did this was a game I'm currently playing. But like, this minor, it sounds like I'm complaining a little bit. This game is absolutely amazing. Like, this is a fraction of a percent of my overall experience.
I mean, having a complaint does not detract from, like, the game's quality. In fact,
I wouldn't even say...
More complaints is usually indicative of... Yeah. I mean, you're going to see more complaints of the game you really like.
Yeah, I know. It's that when you care about something, you complain about it.
Right. Right, the caring, but
you
even
can't hate something
the
if
amount
you don't
of time
love
you
it.
Spend with it.
You know, no. If you're truly apathetic about something, it's like, I don't care.
Right. But also, you know, even if you hate something, you play for 10 minutes, put it down, you're not going to have the number of complaints you'd have for something that you played for 100 hours, even if the 100 hours thing is much better overall. So, how far in the Cuphead are you?
Cuphead, on my single-player game, I am in the second world, and then I've been playing co-op with Zach every time I go to Long Island, and I'm in the third world, so I'm actually further in co-op than I am in single-player, but I want to beat both of them, because it's a much different experience in co-op.
So, the real question is, after playing Cuphead, are you going to go back and play Dark Souls that you have in your Steam inventory?
Dark Souls, unfortunately, is in my backlog.
Well, I mean, even more specifically, though, that I've heard people describe Cuphead as a like 2D platformer version of Dark Souls.
No, that's them jokingly saying it's as hard as Dark Souls. Like, it's not. It is not at all the Dark Souls of running guns.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. It's strictly, it's the, you know, that joke like, oh, it's the Dark Souls of tutorials. Oh, it's the Dark Souls of X.
You know, people grossly misunderstand the, like, it's like,
it's like, you know, Dark Souls, but with cups. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, pretty much, I'd say it's almost, most of the time when people say that about something, they're incorrect.
Most of the, at this point, it's become like a meme, and they're just joking.
I don't think so. I think most people just associate Dark Souls with, quote-unquote, being very difficult. Even though that's only, it's only the case because people have conflated dying with difficulty?
Yes, well, that's the other thing. You know, it's, oh, no, this game, I died, I got a game over, wow, this game's hard.
Right. Even though
I had to learn a mechanic, the DOS didn't just die in one hit. What a hard game.
Yeah. Although now I just want to play more Dark Souls. Well, that's not true. I actually want to go back into VR and finish making my stupid Dark Souls Shadow of the Colossus thing.
But yeah, Super Mario Odyssey is just amazing. And like, there's so much content. Like, you beat the game, and it's like, oh, you just unlock like a couple new kingdoms to explore, and there's a bunch of old stuff in the old kingdoms. And these kingdoms are just, like, they're not huge, but they're bigger than Mario 64, if that makes sense.
And they're not large, but they feel big.
It's like,
is what you're saying?
Well, no, it's like, they're not so large that I would complain about their size, but they are big enough that they feel like really good, meaty worlds with plenty of stuff in there. As opposed to, say, like, you know, Mario 64, obviously a very good game, but if you're actually, like, playing it, you can run from one end of, like, Bob-omb Battlefield to the other in, like, what, 30 seconds? It's a very small level. All of them are very small.
Right, there's nothing wrong with that. They feel big, though, I think.
The first time you play that, they feel big because you're, like, you're, you know, kind of, like, exploring, you're getting through there. But once you actually get down to playing the game, like, seriously, fast, it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to run this, like, long S-turns through the field. I'm going to immediately turn right from the starting area, jump up to the, like, middle area, then, you know, get right on the tower and jump up.
Left?
Or, excuse me, turn left. Did I say right?
You said right.
Yeah, there's nothing to the right.
I don't know, it's,
But, like, you see where I'm going with this. Like, it's...
Yeah. Well, my point, though, is, like, large and big, I feel like, in video game worlds, are kind of a different definition. In that, like, when a world is large, I generally find that to be problematic, in that, like, it's just a physically large space to traverse. Whereas big, I feel like, more often refers to a lot of things to do that it feels very large, like, geographically, because of all the things within it. Or, like, density versus size, I guess. I don't know. I haven't played it. I super want to, though. But you wouldn't let me.
Because, you know, you wanted to play the game before I did.
Yeah, well, it wasn't my fault that you hadn't played it yet.
Yes, it was because I had just got the game that weekend. And you're like, oh, I want to play it. I'm like, I haven't played it yet. I don't even have a save file yet.
Can't believe you denied me this. I'll play it when I come off Buffalo.
Actually, Paul got a Switch too, so if you're ever at Merrimack, you can play there.
What are the odds of that?
It depends on whether or not Paul is playing.
Sarcastically, I was being sarcastic about it, and obviously I wouldn't probably spend most of my time there. Because those are the only people I know in the entirety of Buffalo.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know other people, but those are the people, like, in your age group. And, like, play
well, right,
style and everything.
I will meet people because of school.
And, you know, you just, you seem to be a friendly person that can make friends.
Yeah, and I'm gonna have to find, I'm probably gonna try to see if I can, like, guest skate with the Queen City Rollers, like, roller derby team.
What the?
There's no men's derby, there's no, MRDA in, like, within, like, 4 hours drive of Buffalo. So.
I mean.
I don't know, I'll probably try to start a club.
Yeah, just start a club at UB.
No. It's not like I'll have anything else to do.
Yeah.
Like, school.
Or you could just, you know, not do a sport that's predominantly for women.
I mean, it's not predominantly for women, it's just happenstance that the population skews that way. It's like 99%.
I mean, I think once a sport is 99-1, you can say it's predominantly for.
Well, it's not predominantly for, it's just predominantly.
Yeah, but like, wasn't it made for women? I thought you said like that was like its origin.
No, I think. I mean, I don't know its origin, but I do know historically it's been. But again, that's also a result of the population of people, right? Like,
historically, it's only for women. Because only women would think to play it. Men don't even try. Because men don't even try. You know, there's no inroads for men in it.
Right. And, I mean, there's, so, because the population is so much smaller, like, you know, if you were someone in Buffalo, like, if you, today, were like, hey, I want to try roller derby, you know, you'd go online, you'd look, and you'd see there's literally nothing in even remote drive of you that you could even do it. So, unless you wanted to then start a league and then find a bunch of people to also participate, which would be, you know, good luck doing, you know, finding an entire team of people for a specific sport.
Yeah, in Buffalo, a place that's, you know, a population of 240,000, of which 1/4 are college students.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's, yeah. But it's a great sport and you should totally do it. Cannot recommend it enough. Like, from a game design standpoint, I can't recommend it enough. Like, consider this. Like, you know the rules to basketball, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm sure I don't know, like, 100% of the rules, but, like,
I mean, you know the,
I can follow the game and know what's happening. Ball, yeah.
Both teams are trying to get the ball put in the hoop.
Yeah, I'm sure there's now, some, like, obscure arcane rule, like.
Not the point of this exercise. Yeah. Now, imagine there were two balls, and each team had their own ball. It was only for their team.
Okay.
That's roller derby. Like, that is.
Can you take the other team's ball?
No.
So why wouldn't you just play two single-player games and just try to get.
Because you're on the same court. So you're trying to score in the same hoop.
Oh, it's one hoop with two balls instead of two hoops with one ball.
Right.
I thought it was, like, two hoops on the opposite side. No, so I'm like,
one hoop.
Where's the sport here? You just, you stay in your own little side?
Well, I mean, the sport is, like, even in that circumstance, if you think they would score faster than you would score,
you try to interfere with them, so it would break off
into,
like,
five players, you only need one of your guys to throw the ball in the hoop, so you send the other four to harass the other team, but they would do the same thing.
No,
you'd, so you need to keep some of your guys to protect your
I would say 3 and 2. You send 2 to harass, and, like, 3 to get the ball.
You need 3 to protect your ball.
Not 2 people to protect your ball, 1 person to actually do the scoring, 2 people to go harass them.
So what do you do then when they send 3 people to harass you?
You get good.
Right.
But it's easier to protect than it is to harass.
Well, right, but and this is where you get into a game, right? Like, it's what's the strategy? Like,
I don't know what the dominant strategy is. I'm describing a hypothetical game. I would need to see it played.
This is what I'm saying. Like, this is how games happen, right? Like, you don't know what the dominant strategy is. You have to figure it out.
Yes, and I'm sure there's even counter strategies. Like, oh, if they send 3, then I do this. If they send 2, then I do that.
Right. Well, if they send 5, and they just have someone who's really good at shooting from full court.
Well, game ogre, you're Shrek'd.
Well, no, because you can still then harass them while also attempting to score on your goal. Like, this is one.
If they're so good, they can get, like, cross court shots in.
That's not preventing harassment, though.
Right? No, but it's more like these guys are very good. This is neither here nor there. I want to talk about my fifth game on my game of the year list. Fire Emblem Echoes, Shadows of Valentia. So I actually had a lot to say about this in my official write-up. Which, I sent you this, right? Why don't you just can you take the official text and just put it in the show notes? Or is that too long?
It's a copy and paste. Like, it's not...
I wasn't sure, like, how long the show notes could be. Because I feel like, my official write-up...
I mean, I could just post it to our website.
No, because you can... Basically, everything... I want the write-ups about the five games. You can skip everything else.
Yeah, I mean, I could just post the five write-ups
to
the website in the show notes to that article on our website.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. But the long and short of it is, right, there's a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, Fire Emblem 2 on the NES. They kept a lot of the, like, actual numbers from the NES game, and it felt weird, right? Because you can definitely tell, like, there were some things in the NES games, like, they hadn't really balanced yet. Like, oh, archers can just hit from, like, three or four away. Okay, and then we'll give them seven move, and then, it's, like, crazy broken strategies. Like, archers can hit you before you even get in range of that sort of stuff.
It's games turning home.